compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, good morning and welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show. I hope you enjoyed your 21-hour break. I did. I am tanned, rested, and ready. And especially ready to talk to you. If you have a comment or a question, my phone number, as you regulars know, is 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. Sorry, this caught my eye. I like stories like this for a couple of reasons. I'll explain. Hiker lost for 24 hours, ignored calls from rescuers because of an unknown number. So let me explain this to you. This happened on October 18th. They don't say if it's a man or a woman. It's just they.
They.
Yeah. So a hiker.
So it's two hikers.
No, one hiker.
I get so confused when I'm reading an article and it's singular, and then all of a sudden it jumps into plural. I'm like, well, which is it?
Right, because it's bad English, poor English. But everyone's doing it. So a hiker lost on a mountain in Colorado ignored repeated calls from rescuers, later explaining that they had been unfamiliar with the phone number, according to authorities. The person was... Why are they not giving a gender? That bugs me. I don't get it. I don't like that. If it's a man, say it. If it's a woman, say it. You don't have to go oblique like this. Mm-hmm. So October 18th, Mount Elbert, the highest peak in the state, Lake County Search and Rescue said they were out canvassing the area. They couldn't find the hiker. Then they tried to call the hiker, but they were unable to reach them, authorities said. The hiker had apparently wandered off the trail and spent the night looking for the trail, that is. After being lost for 24 hours, they, as in the hiker, found their way out and made it to their car. The person apparently didn't know that a search team had been looking for them. The subject ignored repeated phone calls from us because they didn't recognize the number they put on Facebook.
The terrible writing of this article is ruining how great Funny. This story is.
Yeah. This, I have to give credit to Jackie Sallow, who is the author of this article in the New York Post. Terrible diction. You know, don't they have editors anymore for this kind of thing?
Maybe the editor's the one who changed it to they.
That is possible.
But how about, you're lost in the woods. Your phone works.
You're looking to get saved.
Answer the phone.
Yeah, but, and this number keeps calling you, and you're thinking, well, I don't recognize that number. I'm not going to answer it. It could be spam.
It's spam. It's someone mm-hmm. trying to tell me about my car insurance. I'm not answering that. I'd rather,
spend the night in the woods.
Sleep in this bush.
And it's cold. I imagine if it's the highest peak in the state of Colorado, it's probably freezing cold at night, late October, and the search and rescue people can't get you to answer your phone. You have a cell signal. Why don't you call somebody?
Call out. This story doesn't make any sense.
It does not make any sense, but it's in the news, so it's got to be true. So the search and rescue gives some advice. If you're overdue, according to your itinerary, and you start getting repeated calls from an unknown number, please answer the phone because it may be search and rescue.
Duh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's so many things about that article that just invite
Or maybe call questions. For help. You all the phones have this, you can share your location on your phone.
Yeah, I do that.
There's no reason to be lost in the woods if there's cell reception.
They were lost in the woods.
I hope that goes away soon.
I'm not sure. I think it's becoming more entrenched. But I'm going to fight. I'm going to be like a freedom fighter. I want to fight in favor of, in defense of the English language as it's being taken from us. Hey, I want to take a turn into TikTok for a couple minutes because, first of all the kids are doing it. Apparently, this is just getting beyond big. There's something I had not even heard about before, Cyrus, and maybe you've heard about this, but it's called Witch Talk, W-I-T-C-H, as in, Wicked Witch. Witch Talk, over the past year, according to this article, and we'll get a link to this, it's an article at Alatea, over the past year, social media platform known as TikTok has become a newfound place to explore the real-life world of witchcraft. It has received the name of Witch Talk, and according to an article in USA Today, The hashtag witch talk alone has amassed more than 19.8 billion with a B views. Let me repeat that. So on TikTok, if you see the hashtag witch talk hashtag, that's kind of confusing because you call it a hashtag, but part of it is a hashtag. 19.8 billion views. Now, keep in mind, this is for the kiddos. If you had a $1 million bill, you would need 1,000 $1 million bills to have $1 billion. This is 19.8 billion views in what, the last couple of months? The purpose of Witch Talk is to connect a community of people searching for information on modern-day witchcraft. Videos on TikTok explore various spiritual practices of witchcraft and provide a platform for anyone interested in delving into the dark arts. Its popularity has soared over the past year, and author Gabriella Herzig, interviewed by USA Today, explained her thoughts on this trend. She said, "We live in a very intense dark age. People want purpose. They want connection. But beyond that, they want something that helps them connect to something larger than themselves. Something that helps them feel like there's a purpose, and magic does that. Magic is a way to align with your purpose and your power." Terrible. I mean, I disagree with her premise, but I do agree with the point that she's making, that a lot of people are spiritually adrift. They have a deep, innate, insatiable desire for God. Even if they may deny that God exists, they know that they're hungry, they're searching for something. Or as St. Augustine put it so famously, he said, "Our hearts are restless, O Lord, until they rest in thee." And atheists will feel the same restlessness. It's not as though this is unique only to people who are religious, but if you don't know what it is that you're searching for, you'll dabble in all kinds of things and get burned along the way. So the witchcraft is a good example of that. The Catechism of the Catholic Church says, in paragraph 2117, all practices of magic or sorcery by which one attempts to tame occult powers so as to place them at one's service and have a supernatural power over others, even if this were for the sake of restoring their health, are gravely contrary to the virtue of religion, gravely contrary to the gospel of Jesus Christ. These practices are even more to be condemned when accompanied by the intention of harming someone or when they have recourse to the intervention of demons. Wearing charms is also reprehensible. Spiritism often implies divination or magical practices. The church, for her part, warns the faithful against this. Recourse to so-called traditional cures does not justify either the invocation of evil powers or the exploitation of another's credulity. And it sure sounds to me as though, I'm guessing it's primarily young people on TikTok who are being exploited because of their credulity and their hunger for something they don't really understand. They don't know what it is they're hungry for, God, that is, and so they're going in search of something that will fill that void. Now, witchcraft is not going to fill that void. Witchcraft is going to make things exponentially worse. Magic, the article says, seeks to take matters into the wizard's or witch's own hands and denies God's providential care over all creation. It is harmful to the soul and plunges a person into great darkness that can be very hard to overcome. This is true. Witchcraft is a particularly strong avenue for the entrance of Satan and other demonic forces to enter into a person's life. Sometimes it takes an exorcism by a priest to fully deliver a person immersed into that lifestyle of Satanism. So, Cyrus, I would love your observation on this, and I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but since you've got kids at home, and I know that there has been some TikTok activity, you know, what do you as a parent suggest for other parents, you know, to squelch this?
How many more reasons do you need to get rid of this app?
Right. Yeah. Well, I have another one that I'll share with you in just a minute.
Oh, there's more?
Oh,
more,
yeah.
More TikTok?
There's always more.
It has taken young people by storm. So I've gotten it mostly out of my house. It's certainly, okay. So I've missed this whole witch thing, the witch talk. Yeah. That hasn't, I haven't heard anything about that.
Time to do some scrutiny, I guess, on
time
their
to,
phones.
Yep, take the phones and make sure they're staying out of this thing. Mm-hmm. But the TikTok references have dropped to nothing in the house.
At least when you're around,
at
right?
At least when I'm around, yep. Mm-hmm. So they're like, "Oh, Dad's here. Better not talk about witch talk."
TikTok, what's that, Dad? I don't even remember
yeah,
that.
Oh, wow, well, I don't know.
Okay, here's the other thing. This is from the Wall Street Journal. a mysterious rise in cases of teen girls with sudden severe physical tics, TICS, including jerking motions and verbal outbursts. And this is the part that puzzles me, and sometimes blurting out the word beans, B-E-A-N-S, like beans you would eat. And the doctors who have been researching this, I didn't know that there was a medical specialty field called movement disorder, but there are movement disorder doctors. And they traced this all the way back to TikTok. So here it goes. Movement disorder doctors were stumped at first, girls with tics. Now, this is not a tic like you would get out in the field. It's not a living creature. It's like a nervous tic, you know, facial spasms, that kind of thing. So girls with tics are rare, and these teens had an unusually high number of them, which had developed suddenly. After months of studying the patients and consulting with one another, experts at top pediatric hospitals in the U.S., Canada, Australia, and the U.K. discovered that most of the girls had something in common, TikTok. According to a spate of recent medical journals, articles, doctors say the girls had been watching videos of TikTok influencers who said they had Tourette syndrome, which is a nervous disorder that causes people to make repetitive involuntary movements or sounds. Now, that's a real illness. I mean, it's clinically diagnosed. I'm wondering if the girls picked up on that and started to emulate it because they saw these influencers. I hate that word influencer.
Mm-hmm. That's weird.
It's kind of up there with they and them for singular nouns. No one has tracked these cases nationally, but pediatric movement disorder centers across the U.S. are reporting an influx of teen girls with similar tics, TICS. Donald Gilbert, a neurologist at Cincinnati's Children's Hospital Medical Center, he specializes in pediatric movement disorders and Tourette syndrome. He said he's seen about 10 new teens with tics each month since March of 2020. Before the pandemic, the clinic had seen at most maybe one a month. Specialists at other major institutions have also reported similar surges. Since March of 2020, Texas Children's Hospital had reported seeing approximately 60 teens with such tics, TICS, whereas doctors there saw one or two cases a year before the pandemic. Statistics here for Johns Hopkins University Medical Center. There's Rush University Medical Center in Chicago. They give a list of different medical centers and what they've been seeing. There are plenty of tick-like behaviors to witness on TikTok. When doctors in the UK began studying the phenomenon in January, videos containing the hashtag Tourette's had about 1.25 billion, this just boggles my mind, billion views, according to the report. And that number has grown since to 4.8 billion in the ensuing months.
Is this like a chameleon effect where you watch something and you start sounding or acting like the person you're hanging out with or the movie you're watching?
I think it is. And here are some tidbits from the article. It's quite long, so I can't read all of it, but here are some high points. There are some kids who watch social media and develop tics, and some who don't have any access to social media and develop tics. This is Dr. McGuire from one of the medical centers I mentioned above. He says, I think there are a lot of contributing factors, including anxiety, depression, and stress. Many doctors question the stated diagnosis of some Tourette's TikTokers, and they say the behaviors that these mostly female influencers display on their videos, multiple complex motor and verbal tics, don't look like Tourette syndrome to them. Tourette syndrome affects far more boys than girls and tends to develop gradually over time from a young age, and it can be treated. Medication will help. Dr. Gilbert says the symptoms of the teens who have watched them are real, and likely they represent functional neurological disorders, a class of afflictions that include certain vocal tics and abnormal body movements that aren't tied to any underlying disease. To unlearn these tics, doctors recommend cognitive behavioral therapy and tell patients to stay off TikTok for several weeks anyway. And then they give some examples of girls and how they wound up getting these strange facial tics and other tics. One of them, her name is Kayla, a 17-year-old high school senior in Texas. She began developing these tics back in November from watching TikTok. She was diagnosed with an inherited disorder that affects connective tissue. One day, severe back spasms prompted her parents to take her to the emergency room. The doctor there suggested she might have a functional neurological disorder. When she was released from the hospital, she said the ER doctor suggested she see a therapist and a psychiatrist. She was eventually referred to a movement disorder specialist at Texas Children's Hospital when she saw him last month, he asked her about her social media use. She said that during remote school last fall, she had a hard time staying organized and she turned into YouTube and TikTok. And that led her to TikTok compilation videos featuring teens with ADHD or anxiety who also had tics. In one of the videos, she recalled a woman who was baking had such bad tics that she threw eggs against a wall. In another, a girl appeared unable to control her arms and hit people around her.
That's a tic?
You know, is it made up? Is it possible that the people on TikTok are doing this for attention and they don't really have these tics?
I don't know about the people on TikTok, but the people mimicking this stuff, and that doesn't sound right. I mean, my kids went from, you know, going to school and then all of a sudden they're on online learning. So they're staring at their computer all day. And then after school, they jump on a tablet or a video game and they're staring at another screen. So their screen time went up exponentially. And I didn't see any of this stuff going on.
I think the power, if I had to guess, and I'd have, you know, I have zero training. I mean, I took a couple courses in psychology when I was in college.
Yeah, but I took that psychology 101. I'm an expert.
Yeah. So I'm not an expert, but I have to wonder, is this the power of suggestion where they see, like the whole Tide Pod nonsense, you know, they would see somebody eat a Tide Pod and they, oh, I better do that too. Or they'd see the, what do we call that one? The, where you put a big cupful or a spoonful of cinnamon in your mouth.
Yeah,
what do they call that?
There was that one that, there was the one with the protein powder.
Yeah, dry shoveling or dry swallowing or something. It can induce heart attacks. People have choked to death. It can create all kinds of respiratory problems. So it's a really dangerous thing to do, but they see people doing this on TikTok. So the kids say, well, I'm going to do that too.
Yeah, look how many followers they have. If do that and film it, I'll get followers and I'll be famous. You know, I have heard my kids say, I would rather be famous than rich. I was like, you don't know what you're talking about. You don't know what you're talking
about. Cyrus, you do have followers.
All right.
I meet them when I go out and speak in public. They come to the book table. Is Cyrus here?
Well,
you know, we talked about that before. So you have a cult following.
Yeah, that's nice.
You're not a cult leader.
No.
But you,
well,
you could be.
People are very kind, but they love you. And I'm just lucky enough to get to take your daily abuse.
How sweet, Cyrus. Yeah, they do love you. But I'm trying to dampen that as best I can. We'll see what happens. So anyway, TikTok parents, please, you know, pay attention. I urge you, please pay attention. Number one, don't give your children and, you know, tweens and young teenage kids smartphones. Just don't do it. Like, you know, just say no to drugs. Don't do that. It's bad for them. And with every passing day, it seems, there's some new revelation about how these social media apps that are so popular, like TikTok, which is probably the most popular app right now, from what I gather, the deleterious effects are manifold. And, you know, with a little bit of preemptive, sorry, no smartphone, you can have a dumb phone, you know, where you can text or you can receive and make phone calls. That's it. Don't give them smartphones until they're old enough to really handle it. And, you know, the more it goes, it seems like, you know, that age could be well into adulthood. I know it's inevitable.
And if you've already done it, it's like putting toothpaste back in the tube. It's almost impossible to take this stuff away from them.
You sound as though you speak from experience.
so don't give it to them in the first place.
Don't give it to them in the first place. Yeah. Because then you save yourself. Am I right, Cyrus? Can I get an amen here? You save yourself a lot of trouble down the road.
You sure do. Or yeah. So I'm assuming.
And your kids.
Yeah.
Save them. Yeah. Save them a lot of pain and heartache.
You know,
phones are great when you use them properly.
They begged and begged, and I held off. I held off longest with my oldest, and then, you know, I get weaker as a parent as, you know, the other kids grow up. And as soon as you give your kid a phone, they disappear. You don't see them anymore.
Yeah, that's true. I was at, not long ago, my wife was out of town for a few days, and so I went to get breakfast at a local, you know, bacon and eggs place. So I'm sitting in my, I know we have to take a break, so real quick, I'm sitting in my little booth with my bacon and eggs, and I'm reading a book, And this couple is seated next to me, kind of uncomfortably close to me, because they were like right across the aisle. So there's no way they could say anything that I wouldn't hear, you know. So at first they're sort of like talking quietly, and I'm sure they were uncomfortable because I'm sitting right there, and I was uncomfortable because I had been blissfully alone until they showed up. It wasn't their fault. So after what seemed to me like a couple of minutes of futilely trying to speak in quiet tones, they just stopped talking. And a few minutes went by and they weren't saying a word. So I sort of glanced over and they were both on their phones. And so for the next 20 minutes or so that I was there, they hardly exchanged a word. They were just looking at their phones.
That's sad. I've seen whole families do that. Whole family, like with kids, and they're all just they go out to eat and then they're all just staring at their phones. And I know sometimes something comes up and you got to take care of business. And
maybe they're actually listening to the Patrick Madrid Show on the Relevant Radio app with their iPods, in which case I think that's a wonderful thing.
Well, personally, I don't know. At dinner time, it's okay to put the phone down and talk.
Yeah, you're right about that.
Ask them questions,
but then put Relevant Radio's app back on again.
Of course, yeah.
Or play it, you know, in the speakers. Okay, we've got to take a break. We're coming right back. I want to share with you some new information about a syndrome called victim mentality and 16 signs and tips on how you can deal with somebody who's got victim mentality. That might even be you. I'll tell you more about that when we come back from this quick timeout. Today's programming sponsored by Solidarity HealthShare. Information on their health plans available at CatholicHealthShare.com. That's CatholicHealthShare.com.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
I saw this on Facebook, Cyrus, yesterday, and I thought this is really good. It's just like a little infographic. It says, a fetus was the first to rejoice at the news of Jesus. Mm. Think on that. That's from Luke chapter 1, verses 41 through 44. And, of course, the Weisenheimers, they start up immediately. Well, technically, the Blessed Virgin Mary was the first one to rejoice. Yeah, I understand. But in the Magnificat, she says, my soul rejoices in God, my Savior. Okay, I guess nitpicky, technically maybe that is the case, but it still has a great impact. You know, a fetus, an unborn baby, rejoiced at the news of Jesus. And Jesus, his Lord and Savior, as somebody pointed out, it was at that time an embryo. Isn't that amazing to think about that?
That's really cool. And also surprising is that you were on Facebook.
That is very surprising. That's true, because I'm never on there, except for yesterday when I saw this. You know what else, Cyrus? I got to tell you, I log on to Facebook every, I don't know, 6 months, whatever, and I notice how many people are sending me messages there, and they probably think I'm just a jerk and ignoring them, but I never see their messages because I'm never on there.
Well, I have a couple here that I've been waiting to give to you later on in the show. If you want to get to a couple of Facebook emails, we can do that.
Lay it on me.
All right, let's do it.
Let's have one.
All right. Oh, right now?
Well, I mean, do you need to prepare them for me?
Well,
or?
I can get to them. I just didn't have it up on
my phone
yet. So, let's do it in a little bit.
Okay, so I have a couple things I want to get to, including the victim mentality thing. First, though, November is the month where we remember the Holy Souls, and we want to remember your friends and loved ones, family members who have passed from this earthly life. So we're inviting you to join us November 2nd through the 10th. We're going to be praying a special novena for departed loved ones. That'll be during our daily mass, also the chaplet with Drew Mariani and the Family Rosary Across America. And if you'd like to go to relevantradio.com/souls, you can tell us the names of your deceased family and friends so that we can pray for them by name. Again, relevantradio.com/souls, and we'll be praying this novena from November 2nd through November the 10th. We invite you to pray with us. Okay, so this is for your Good to Know file. When I read this all the way through, the first time, some things clicked in my mind in terms of maybe behavior that I've seen over the years in people. And I finally kind of understood a few things about what it might be. Now, this is not necessarily the case that you or somebody you know has let's say, a clinically diagnosable victim mentality. But there are people who do have that, or there are people who are affected by it in some way. So I want to share this with you. It comes from Healthline.com, and the title is Victim Mentality, 16 Signs and Tips to Deal with It. And I'm just going to go through it with you. Do you know someone who seems to become a victim in nearly every situation? It's possible they have a victim mentality, sometimes called victim syndrome or victim complex. The victim mentality rests on three key beliefs. One, bad things happen and will keep happening. Two, other people or circumstances are to blame. Three, any efforts to create change will fail, so there's no point in trying. Boy, have I met people like that. Whew, I think we've all met people like that, right? The idea of the victim mentality is thrown around a lot in pop culture and casual conversation to refer to people who seem to wallow in negativity and force it upon others. It's not a formal medical term. In fact, most health professionals avoid it due to the stigma surrounding it. People who feel trapped in a state of victimization often do express a lot of negativity, but it's important to realize significant pain and distress often fuels this mindset. So what does this look like? Vicky Botnick, a licensed marriage and family therapist in Tarzana, California, she says that people identify with the victim role when they, quote, veer into the belief that everyone else caused their misery and nothing they do will ever make a difference. Now, this is different. I'm going to pause here for a second and just offer my own editorial comment. This seems to me different from the person who blames everybody for whatever and will never take any of the blame for himself. So I know that there are different terms for that. A histrionic personality disorder is one of them. I did a bit of research on that a while ago. And a histrionic personality disorder is marked, especially when people are just, the person who has this disorder is constantly blaming everybody for everything. Nothing is ever right. Everything is objectionable. And yet that person doesn't see his or her own contribution to the problem. It's always, you know, the hysterics that other people are doing something wrong. And even the suggestion that you yourself are doing something wrong will cause the person to go into a fit of rage. So that's another personality disorder. This is kind of like that, but it's different. So here are the things to look for. Number one, avoiding responsibility. One main sign, Dr. Botnick says, is a lack of accountability. Actually, I don't know if she's a doctor, a PhD, but she's that licensed marriage and family therapist. So one main sign is the lack of accountability. This could involve placing blame elsewhere, making excuses, not taking responsibility, reacting to most of life's hurdles with, it's not my fault. Bad things really do happen, often to people who have done nothing to deserve them. It's understandable that people who face one difficulty after another may start to believe the world is out to get them. But many situations do involve varying degrees of personal responsibility. Consider job loss, for example. It's true, some people lose their jobs without good cause, but also often the cause or the case is that certain underlying factors played a part. Someone who fails to consider those reasons may not learn or grow from the experience and could end up facing the same situation again. I've known people like this, where it's just like, it's almost like the Midas touch in reverse, where relationships, jobs, nice situations, living arrangements, they all seem to crumble again and again and again. This is what I mean, Cyrus, when I was saying that as I read this the first time, certain things began to click in my mind. I began to say, oh, that might be the reason why this person always seems to be failing at something. Could be this. I don't know. And I'm not talking about you, Cyrus. You're a winner.
Things are going to change. I can feel it.
Yeah. You don't have to be a star to be in my show, yeah, literally.
This victim, identifying as a victim is a real dangerous way to look at your life and thinking about the past and what has been done to you is kind of like living in the past. And it's really hard to move forward when you're stuck, you know, with something that had happened to you a long time ago.
There is the victim mentality when people play the victim and they're really not, you know,
yes,
they, plural. You know, when somebody plays the victim, oh, woe is me. I have to do this. I have to do that. Nobody helps me. You know, we've all run into people like that. I suppose, truth be told, maybe at times we ourselves can even fall into that.
Yeah.
But there are some people who really lean on that pretty heavily. So the article says, not all negative situations are completely uncontrollable, even if they seem that way at first. Often there's at least something small you can do as an action that can lead to improvement. People who come from a place of victimization may show little interest in trying to make changes. They may reject offers of help and may seem like they're only interested in feeling sorry for themselves. Spending a little time wallowing in misery isn't necessarily unhealthy. This can help with acknowledging and processing painful emotions, but this period should have a definite endpoint. After that, it's more helpful to begin working toward healing and change. Man, is that true? A sense of powerlessness. Many people who feel victimized believe that they lack power to change their situation. They don't enjoy feeling downtrodden. They would like for things to go well, but life continues to throw these situations at them that from their perspective, they can do nothing to succeed or escape. It's important, Botnick says, to be mindful of the difference between unwilling and unable. It's a key point. She explains that some people who feel like victims do make a conscious choice to shift the blame and take offense at what other people say and do. But in her practice, she more commonly works with people who experience deep-seated psychological pain that makes change truly seem impossible to them. By the way, deep-seated, often misspelled when people write that. It's not S-E-E-D-E-D, like a seed that was planted deeply. It's seated, as if you were seated in a chair. Deep-seated problems. Pretty good to know, file.
Seated makes more sense to me. This is deep-seated.
All right. Seated. Well, I'm telling you. It's like there is no such word as grievous. Well, you hear people at Mass on Sunday, through my fault, through my fault, through my most grievous fault. There is no such word as
grievous. Is that a pet peeve?
It is.
Yeah,
it is.
Well, I must confess. If you can call one person they, then I can say seated.
Okay, that's fine. If I can call one person what?
They.
Oh, well, see, I'm just mimicking popular culture.
Right. All right.
How about this?
Let's go back. This is actually really interesting. I like.
Are this. You thinking as we're going along, like, oh yeah, that makes sense now that I think about it. Yeah. Well, not you. I'm not saying you. I'm just saying I mean, I can think of people over the years that I've met in my lifetime. People living with a victim mentality. By the way, I have to pause on this too. This is another thing nowadays. You can no longer say, you know, a cancer patient or, you know, polio patient. Or it's always got to be now a person living with cancer. You know, a person living with polio. And I understand it. It's, you know, trying to make the person more human, I guess, and not define them by their illness. But it just goes overboard, if you ask me. And this is an example of it. Anywho, feeling victimized can contribute to beliefs such as everything bad happens to me, or I can't do anything about it, so why try? Or I deserve the bad things that happen to me, or no one cares about me. Each new difficulty can reinforce these unhelpful ideas until they're firmly entrenched in the inner monologue. Over time, negative self-talk can damage resilience, making it harder to bounce back from challenges and to heal. Negative self-talk often goes hand in hand with self-sabotage. People who believe their self-talk often have an easier time living it out. If that self-talk is negative, they may be more likely to consciously sabotage any attempts that could help them change. Lack of confidence. People who see themselves as victims may struggle with self-confidence and self-esteem. This can make feelings of victimization even worse. Perhaps saying things like, I'm not smart enough to do a better job. I'm not smart enough to get a better job. I'm not talented enough to succeed.
This is why I don't let my kids talk bad about themselves. They'll be like, oh, I'm so stupid. I'm like, don't you dare talk about my daughter like that.
Right. Because you're good enough.
You're smart enough, and doggone it,
people like you. Yeah. Now you're talking. So, frustration, anger, and resentment. A victim mentality can take a toll on emotional well-being. People with this mindset might feel frustrated and angry with a world that seems against them, hopeless about their circumstances ever changing, hurt when they believe loved ones don't care, resentful of people who seem happy and successful. Man, was that a ringer right there for me. Knowing some people over my lifetime who just, they personify this. They just seem angry and resentful when other people around them are happy. And I've never understood that. I guess I'm understanding a little bit better now. These emotions can weigh heavily on people who believe they'll always be victims, building and festering when they aren't addressed. Over time, these feelings can contribute to angry outbursts, depression, isolation, and loneliness. Where does this come from? The article says. Very few, if any, people adopt a victim mentality just because they can. It's often rooted in a few specific things. Past trauma, for example. To an outsider, someone with victim mentality might seem overly dramatic. But this mindset often develops in response to true victimization. It can emerge as a method of coping with abuse or trauma. Facing one negative circumstance after another can make this outcome more likely. Not everyone who experiences traumatic situations go on to develop victim mentality, but people react to adversity in different ways. Emotional pain can disrupt a person's sense of control or contribute to feelings of helplessness. Betrayal. Betrayal of trust, especially repeated betrayals, can also make people feel like victims because they are, and make it hard for them to trust other people. So if your primary caregiver, for example, rarely followed through on commitment to you as a child, why can't they just say parent? If your mom or dad, what do you mean your primary caregiver? I'm gonna correct this as I go along. If your mom or dad or parents rarely followed through on commitment to you as a child, you may have a hard time trusting others down the line. Codependency is another one. This mindset can also develop alongside codependency. A codependent person may sacrifice goals to support his or her partner. They said there, Cyrus, so I didn't want to repeat that bad grammar. As a result,
it's everywhere.
It is everywhere. It is. You know what I fear is that over time, we're going to be so swamped with it that eventually we'll all just, without even realizing it, we'll just all start using it.
Mm-hmm.
Come visit me in jail. When they put me in prison for not using preferred pronouns. Yep,
grammar police is going to come after you.
Yeah. Manipulation, there's a whole section on that. Talks about toxic behavior often associated with narcissistic personality disorder. And here's some things you can do. So how do you respond? It can be challenging to interact with somebody who always sees herself or himself as a victim. I'm just going to read it as it is. It's ridiculous. They might refuse to take responsibility for their mistakes and blame everyone else when things go wrong. They may always seem down on themselves. But remember that these people have a mindset that has faced difficult or painful life events. This doesn't mean you have to take responsibility for them or accept accusations or blame, but let empathy guide your response. That's a very good suggestion there.
Yeah.
Poorly worded, but it is a good suggestion. Labels. The article says generally are not helpful. Victim is a particularly charged label. It's best to avoid referring to someone as a victim or saying that they're acting like a victim. Instead, they suggest try to compassionately bring up specific behaviors or feelings that you notice, such as complaining, blame shifting, not accepting responsibility, feeling trapped or powerless, feeling like nothing makes a difference. Set boundaries. Some of the stigma around a victim mentality relates to the way people sometimes blame others for their own problems, or they guilt trip them about things that haven't worked out. And then it offers a few more practical solutions, some things you can try. Very helpful overall. And they give some examples of where you might want to start looking for a therapist to help somebody who's in this situation. So anyway, check it out. Cyrus is going to post a link to this. It's called Victim Mentality, 16 Signs and Tips to Deal with It. We're going to return in just a moment. We have some phone calls waiting. The number is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. I will be right back right after this. This hour is sponsored by Ave Maria Mutual Funds, where financial goals are aligned with pro-life values, and fund decisions are based on investment fundamentals designed to preserve and grow wealth without violating moral beliefs. More information at AveMariaFunds.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
I'd rather listen to this for a while than me, but you got to hear from me. It's my show, after all. Welcome back, 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Jim now in Easton, Pennsylvania. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Patrick. I've been reading recently about some medieval theologians, in particular Duns Scotus or Scotus. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how you pronounce that. But I was really drawn to his one theory about the, I believe it's called the absolute priority of Christ, where he would have been become incarnate even if there was no sin for us to be redeemed from.
Right.
Which then the second part of that would be then, what about the Blessed Mother also? Would she still be who she is? So I'm curious of your opinion on this.
Yeah, he's a very influential medieval or a late medieval scholar. And that claim or that view is also held by St. Thomas Aquinas, who was a near contemporary of his. And he, too, discusses that question. Like, if Adam and Eve had passed their test, would the incarnation still have happened? And so, again, this is speculative. So it's not as though this is a doctrine of the faith. It's purely speculative because it didn't happen that way. So at best, all we can do is say what might have happened. But it seems reasonable to me. I don't see any reason to say that couldn't have happened. But obviously, it didn't happen. So we have to deal with things as they are. But that would be my approach to that issue. It's an interesting possibility.
I'm sorry. I was going to say, I just find something like even more endearing or loving about that that Jesus would have come down to be with us anyway, to become one of us, no matter what.
Yeah. I mean, if that had happened, I see your point. You asked about the Blessed Virgin Mary. Again, it's pure speculation, so we can only surmise what might have happened. But if Jesus were incarnate, if he were to become incarnate in the same way, then obviously his mother would have a role, and she would have the same role, but it would be different because if everybody was confirmed in grace, then, there would be no need for the crucifixion, there would be no need for all of the suffering that Jesus went through, and by association that his mother went through, seeing her son suffer. So those things would not have happened, but...
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard for me to really say much more than that. I don't really know what more to say, but I find that what you're seeing is true, and that is that it just shows how much God loves us.
Yes, yeah, no matter what. His love for us is the greatest thing. Yeah. And I guess the third part of that, if I may really very quickly, then would the church still be the church? Like, would there be need for us to have the Catholic Church?
Well, I don't know what we would call it. Maybe it would have been called a Catholic Church, but everybody, so if all human beings were confirmed in grace, or at the very least, let's say if Adam and Eve had passed their test and therefore were apt and capable to pass on to their offspring these preternatural gifts that they had in the garden before the fall, even if there were individuals who fell into sin, I would think that the fact that Jesus, if he were there, so let's assume the incarnation as part of this scenario, I mean, everybody would be a follower of Jesus. Everybody would, because they're confirmed in grace, their wills would conform to that of God's. And therefore, if you want to call that the church, the assembly, ecclesia in Greek, it sounds like there would be that church, but it would be completely in conformity with the will of God. Every member being in the will of God.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah. Thank you, Patrick, very much.
You're most welcome. And I admire you for thinking these deep thoughts. Not a lot of people think about things like this. So good for you, Jim. And thanks for the call. How about Christopher in Albuquerque? Hi, Christopher.
Hi, Father.
Hi. I'm not a priest. I'm a dad. I have a lot of kids, but I'm not a priest. Christopher.
Did God make the devil?
Say that again now.
Why did God make the devil?
All right. Well, when God made him, he wasn't the devil. So God made him as a very good, beautiful angel. And because God loves the angels, just like he loves us human beings, and he wants us to be able to love him back. You have to be free to love somebody, right? You have to be, nobody can force you to love them, right, Christopher? You with me?
Yeah.
Okay. So because God loves us and because he wants us to love him, we have to be free to love him in return. And what happened with the devil was when God created him, he created him good and beautiful, but the devil did not want to love God. So he changed from being a good angel to being a bad angel. We call those the devils. So it was his own fault. And God wanted him to be good and gave him the opportunity to be good, but that angel said, nope, I'm not going to be good. And he turned against God, and that's how he became the devil. So God did not make him as a devil. Does that make sense?
Oh.
Well, Christopher, I hope that helps. I appreciate hearing from you. Thank you. Let's go to Francis now in North Hollywood, California. Hi, Francis.
Hi, Patrick. Good to hear from you. Hey, I have a quick question. You know, when you take Saint Faustina, and you know, they always say, "On the hour of death, Jesus will come to you like three times." And I was thinking, how about what happened to Saint Paul and Saint Genesius, like the emperor had him, you know, when Jesus or the angels appeared to them, they converted, right? So I'm thinking, because the veil of illusion or brainwash was lifted from them, you know, they finally saw the light. So I was thinking, how about the good Protestants and the good Jews, when they die, won't like somebody like Saint Faustina come to them, and then the veil of illusions or the veil of brainwashed by society be lifted, then they would all of a sudden partake in the Eucharist. So
it's certainly possible. As you say, Saul of Tarsus had that experience when he was on the road to Damascus and Jesus appeared to him and he experienced a tremendous conversion. So we do know that those kind of things happen, whether or not it's the case where every non-Catholic receives some sort of an opportunity like that around the time of death, we don't know. I mean, I consider St. Faustina to be something of an authority on these issues, at least from the things that were revealed to her. But they're not doctrines of the church. Those private revelations, I think, are very good and helpful. But we don't say that that's definitely what happens. The church doesn't teach that as a doctrine. But we're free to hold that view. So, yeah, I mean, I think your way of looking at it makes sense in light of those things.
Oh, okay, so it's a fact that it's not a doctrine, but it's still very possible if you I guess wholeheartedly believe in what Saint Faustina says. Okay, that's clear.
Yeah, that's how I would approach it. So we do our best in the final analysis. We do our best to evangelize those around us, to share the gospel with them, to teach them about Jesus and his church, the Catholic Church, knowing that some people will gravitate toward it, others won't, and we pray for those who, for whatever reason, don't accept the gospel, and hope and pray that if it takes place maybe at the very end of their life, that God will give them that final opportunity to make a decision, and hope that they'll be saved. So what's the old saying? Work as if everything depended upon you, and pray as if everything depended upon God. That's a very good way to approach it. You know, evangelize and pray. Well, I appreciate that. Thank you, Francis. I don't think we have time to get to another call. We have people holding, but if you all who are holding don't mind, just wait a little bit more. We're going to come back from a quick time out here in just a minute, and we'll be able to take your phone calls. The number is 888-914-9149.
Man's got to know his limitations.
Yeah, where have I heard that before? I've heard that somewhere before.
You're a legend in your own mind.
Oh, now you're on that soundboard, huh? Okay. 888. You got another one you want to play? I'll give you some time, Cyrus, if you want.
Go ahead. Make my day.
All right. Okay, I will. If you keep listening to the Patrick Madrid program, I will make your day. You're going to love it. The next 2 hours, you're going to love it. You'll be blissfully listening to the radio. Not blissfully alone, blissfully alone, but blissfully listening to the radio.
This is extremely dangerous to our democracy.
Indeed. 888-914.
I like just stumping you.
Great. Yeah, I can tell. I can tell you do. So, yeah. So we have a break coming. Anything you want to add, Cyrus, before we go to a break?
Yeah, you got 5 whole seconds to fill. Can you do it?
I think I can. 4, 3, 2, 1. All right, we are coming right back after this. There is a line or two open. You can call by dialing this number, 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. Interesting story went down on an American Airlines flight recently, and I've got an eyewitness account of what happened. I'll share that with you when we return from this quick timeout.